There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, our daily podcast bringing together the best bits of today's show from Tuesday, December the 17th. Right, we are shopping. New shopping mall opening up in Dubai tomorrow morning, out in the Jebel Ali area. See, I was about to say out in the Ibn Battuta area, because there happens to be already a mall in that direction. Yeah. But this one is going to have an IKEA. We have been chatting on the show this morning to the guys from Alphatay Malls, Tim Ernest, their group director, discussing whether or not they're building a mall with an IKEA attached or an IKEA that happens to have a couple of shops around it.
I was interested. I mean, one thing I didn't realise until this morning, it's the business breakfast. It's the gift that keeps on giving, really, isn't it? I didn't realise when I walked in this morning just how significant the Scandinavian furniture shop is to malls. I didn't realise that if you put that brand up, people will come. You know, that old adage of Dubai, of the UAE, I mean, if you build it, they will come. I mean, literally, you put that brand up and people will flock to it from far and wide. And therefore, that's why it's so valuable in this day and age to malls.
And it's interesting because there's been a big argument for the last 4 or 5 years about whether anchor tenants have had their day. Anchor tenants being the big shop that people come in for. Sometimes it's a supermarket. Sometimes it's a department store in the US. It's often a department store. In fact, in the 70s, you got a lot of malls built in what they called the barbell design, which would be long and then have two anchor tenants at each end, like the weights. And it might be a Macy's and a Lord and Taylor down the other end, whatever it happens to be. And you go in for that, and before you know it, you've popped in, you've had a coffee, and you've done a bunch of other stuff. The anchor tenant model, people have been debating, has it died out? I think it depends what it is. And I think when it's something like IKEA, particularly when you don't have that many, I mean, we've heard this morning, and Alphatay certainly, they've said, look, we've crunched the numbers. We know what we're doing. We know there's a lot of other shopping malls out there, but we also know that this is going to work.
But it's okay. So I'm trying to look at it from a London point of view, and you look at it from John Lewis, and John Lewis, big old campaign at the moment to try and get people to come to their stores because most people are buying online from John Lewis at present, and even their Christmas adverts are sort of heeding to that as well, with the push. And yet you look at somewhere like Harrods, and they still get queues out the door every single day. It's still a destination shopping venue because of the history, because of the brand, etc. And I was just trying to think, I mean, I think it's the first time Harrods and IKEA have been put in the same sentence together, but it's a similar sort of thing where if you build it, people will come. They have to. It's an immersive, we've been talking about immersive entertainment. It's an immersive shopping experience, which you can't get from the online element, which other stores you just go to for essentials more than anything.
We spoke to Tim Ernst this morning, as I said, group director of Alphatay Malls. And one of the first questions we asked him was why that location, you know, Jebel Ali, not yet the most populated part of Dubai, Ibn Battuta to the left of you, Marina Mall behind you. Why was...
Is that another Lionel Richie lyric?
Why was this the right location? And this is what he had to say.
Well, it's the right location because of where we see the growth of Dubai, and really what you want to do is serve a growing market. And when you're looking at a second location of a very successful worldwide store, you know that in itself has a huge advantage for us. So there's definitely a need. There's a market, and that market will continue to grow. So we've taken their lead and have developed very much a lifestyle property. So I know a lot of malls and a lot of developers will say our product is different. This product is very different because it's one that you can get in and out of quickly, but you can also linger and spend time. And it's very lifestyle. So the types of goods and services that you want on a daily and weekly basis are very prevalent. So it's a very good complement to probably what's the best retailer in the world, IKEA. So we're very proud.
And it comes at an interesting time, though, because there's a lot that's said about community malls, about small malls that serve you where you are, you know, whether that's the Arabian ranches or the springs, it's got what you need, you're in and out. And that we've certainly seen a rise of those and the way that we live here, where we tend to live in developed communities or areas, very specific areas. Do we still need big malls, or specifically, do we need more big malls? This is Tim.
Fortunately, we're on both sides of that particular business because IKEA is an Alphatain business. So it's one of those things that you look to put the right neighborhood around your core IKEA business. So that's a lot of reason why we're different. We're not opening on a speculative basis. We're not saying, oh, we hope people will come shop. We already know. We have market research. We know exactly where those customers sit within that marketplace. And once again, we've surrounded it then with complimentary merchandise. You know, we're not trying to be a fashion mall. We do have fashion tenants. We're not trying to be an entertainment mall. We'll have entertainment tenants. But we're trying to be that convenient shop that you can get those everyday goods. And if you do want to do linger and go to movies or go to nice restaurants, those are available to you too.
See, that's what I struggle with, because he mentions there the convenient shop. But convenient shopping these days is getting your laptop whilst in front of your Netflix, whatever, or getting on your phone and making sure it's ordered to your doorstep. This is different, because the convenient shop still demands you go down there for a certain brand. I'm sure other brands benefit from the fact that the footfall comes down and go, oh, whilst I'm here, I might as well pop in there and grab a Marks and Spencer egg sandwich or something like that.
go for a bookcase, leave with a three-wick candle.
But that's what I think is unique in the retail market at the moment. Brands that drive footfall as opposed to e-commerce.
Well, look, IKEA's had a website for a very long time. You can get stuff delivered from it. But I tell you what, if you're down there on a Friday morning in Festival City, you'll know that people aren't doing it on their laptops.
Which is what's so weird, because they've got such an efficient website. You're actually going down there to buy a bookcase. So
you don't know what else you might need when you get there.
You don't need the meatballs. Leave the meatballs. Just buy the bookcase online, not take any business away from you.
But it is. It's one of those few places where people want to buy extra things rather than don't want to accidentally buy extra things. They're also putting a huge amount of technology in this new IKEA as well. We spoke recently to Vinod Jayan, who's the managing director of IKEA for the UAE, Egypt and Oman, about how this store was going to be different compared to what they've got in Abu Dhabi and compared to what they've got down in Festival City. This is what he said.
This IKEA store will be one of the most digitally integrated stores in the world when we open. And we will incorporate a lot of that in our existing stores as well. But the customers are going to really find a different experience where, you know, you will have a lot of digital interaction.
What does that mean in practice?
Okay, let's start. We will have a mobile app ready where you can just come scan the product and you can buy it on the on the app, you know, instead of going and waiting at the till. That's number one.
So what, I will have paid in the aisle effectively?
Yes, you would have paid when you're shopping in the aisle. The second one is you'll have a lot more interactive digital screens where you can configure your mattress, you can configure your packs. So you really don't, one of the biggest things, when you have 25 to 30,000 visitors on a single day during the weekend, it's very difficult to find a co-worker for every single consumer. So how do you make sure that we can enable the consumer's shopping experience? And so some of these packs, even the wardrobes, you will be able to digitally configure it.
Vinod Jayan of IKEA.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Dubai Cars has been around since 2014. They've now become the UAE's largest online car market for buyers and sellers across the Emirates. In the last couple of days, we've heard from them that used car prices are going up in the UAE for the first time. That's according to their CEO. He is Mr. Craig Stevens. He is here in the studio with us. Craig, thanks so much indeed for being with us.
Thank you.
So let's get to these figures first and foremost and kickstart the conversation there. You're saying that used car prices are going up in the UAE for the first time. How have you arrived at this surmisation?
Yeah, well, first off, let me just explain that for anyone who went to bed last night and woke up this morning, your car is not worth more than it was last night. Okay, so let's make that quite clear.
24-hour advance.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Now, what we're saying basically is there are some key dynamics that are happening in the market that are actually increasing the price of used vehicles. And we got to this analysis by doing two or three key things. Firstly, we have pretty much every used car on our site. We have from private sellers, from official dealers, and from independent dealers. And we have 3 million searches a month. And that goes back over 4 or 5 years. We then work with a company called AlgoDriven. And AlgoDriven work with a lot of the finance and insurance companies and car dealers over here. So what they get is the transactional data. So what we are, we're in a pretty unique position where we get to see the transactional prices and data, and we get to see supply and demand data from our site. And basically, we've merged those two numbers together to actually understand the dynamic that's happening with used car pricing. Mm.
So I get it from a used car seller's point of view. They're benefiting. How are sellers and buyers of used car benefiting at the moment as well?
I think there's a range of things here. Look, I mean, if the car is worth more than it would have been a year ago, then everyone's got a bit more money in their pocket. So that's a good thing to start off with. The second thing is only 42% of the people in the UAE are buying their next car when they're selling their old car. So a lot of people are selling their car and either leaving the country or they're downsizing their fleet. And therefore, they're going to sell their car at a better price point than potentially they would have done if they'd have sold their car last year or the year before. The other thing is that if they're selling their car at a higher price point, then they can buy a better car. So I think at the moment there's confusion in the market about how people sell their car. And selling your car is quite a scientific process. And if you go through it in a scientific way, you'll get maximum return on the car that you're selling. And if you do that, then actually you'll have more money to spend on your next car.
Is there a direct correlation between tightening of belts and a lot of people saying that cost of living is going up at the moment, dirhams aren't going as far as they used to, and therefore there are fewer new cars being bought, etc.? Does that play into the hands of used car sellers and buyers?
Oh, massively. Look, to become a used car, you start off as a new car, right? So we don't suddenly invent used cars. And there are less new cars being pushed into the market. So if there's less new cars being pushed in, there's less newer cars on the market. And look, you're absolutely right. The consumer's becoming far more savvy. You know, they're going to lose 20, 30% on that car price if they buy it new. So actually, if you buy a year old one, you're sort of not losing that depreciation the first year. If you're only staying in Dubai for 2 years, is it worth buying a new car and taking a massive hit on depreciation the first 2 years? Or would you be better buying a used car, a nearly new car, and taking a far less hit on the price?
Which begs the question, why has it taken us so long to become savvy? Why has it always been a sort of given here that you arrive in Dubai and you buy a new car?
Because, Tom, you need me, that's why. You need me to tell people there's a better way to do it. And I think that's the point, right, is that, you know, everyone has got these urban myths about what's going on. I heard you earlier talking, you know, it's the heat, or the cars are different, and there's this, there's that. If the cars are so different, official dealers wouldn't give you a 7-year warranty on your vehicle if it was that different, right? These cars are built to last. So there's an urban myth about you've got to buy a brand new car, otherwise it's going to blow up on the side of the road and it'll melt. These are urban myths. And the cars are well built, they're lasting well, and therefore actually people are naturally now migrating to used car market. And it's about time it happened.
Let's talk about what we have seen with price. You're saying prices 4 to 10% more this year rather than last year. What's at the bottom end of the scale and what's at the top? Where's the differential?
Oh, look, I mean, these are averages. And the trouble is in Dubai, averages don't always work. So if I give you an example, the most expensive car on our site currently is a Bugatti. It's over 13 million dirhams. So now that has global appeal. So what we find from our side is actually half of our traffic and half of our leads come from outside the UAE. We get traffic from America, from Europe. These are global cars, well-specced, very low mileage, well-looked after, that are collector's cars. So there's a massive range. But look, what we do know is that the Japanese cars in this marketplace, they hold their value very, very well. But, and here's the big but, if you look after your car, if you describe it well, if you make sure it has a full service history, then actually that has a massive impact on the price of your vehicle.
What about the new car stream in? Because one of the other figures that you've gotten here, and I think, has it come from the RTA, that we've seen a massive tick downwards in the amount of new cars that are being sold?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What does that effectively mean for the stream of cars, though, that will come on the market?
Well, look, I think it's an interesting question. I mean, look, don't forget we have got Expo 20 coming up, and no one knows what that's going to do to the car market. That's going to push potentially a lot of volume in. But at the moment, it means that the market was saturated with new cars being forced into the marketplace at fairly low price points. I mean, the consumers had some amazing choice on new cars. That is now starting to slow down dramatically, as I say, down 50%. And that just means then, as I say, there are less newer cars or nearly new cars in the used car market. And that has to have an issue on price.
Your figures also suggest that cars are selling faster, used cars are selling faster than they used to. Is that purely because the demand is greater because there's less amount there?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think also the fact that we are seeing people are spending more time now describing their car and putting more effort into selling their car. So all those things add up. But yeah, I mean, look, we're seeing cars now. I mean, let's take a Ford Edge, for example. I mean, that can sell within 9 days on our site. There's massive demand for these kind of vehicles. So yeah, I think it's just purely because there's more people who want them, the prices are better, there's less available, demand's up, the market's moving faster.
Just quick, I mean, we had loads of text messaging on this throughout the entirety of the morning as well. A lot of them around trust issue as well. A lot of people saying they've bought from pre-owned dealerships and cars failed, etc. Is this an issue in the market at the moment, given the fact that there are so many available out there, and if people do have a bad experience, it can jade them?
Massively. Look, whenever you buy any used product, then obviously there's always concerns over the quality of the product. So it is buyer beware. But I think that we're definitely supporting the consumer, helping them think about how they can buy safely. And there's a range of products and tools that we've got on our site to help them do that. If you look at our site, you'll see loads of photographs, better quality photographs, better descriptions, valuation tools. All of these things will help people buy with confidence. And that's definitely what we want to do. But look, absolutely, I mean, a tip for the consumers out there, if the ad says the car is not in the country, don't buy it unless the car is in the country. And we see lots of these things going on. And we're writing about this all the time to try and help the consumer.
Craig Stevens, CEO of DubiCars.com. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. The Business Breakfast's Pick of the Papers.
Right, wrestling through the papers with one Natasha Thomas from the news team. Do you have more information on this morning's most dramatic story? We are already mentally casting the Bond-esque movie here in the Business Breakfast. Tom, of course, will be stepping in to the Bond-esque mode.
Just an addendum, when this was first mentioned earlier on today and Serena came in and she talked about it, And ordinarily, Brandy and I would look at each other and sort of comment off the back of these stories, and there might be a bit of a flippant comment, it might be a bit of fun. It was just sort of look at each, yeah, we're not going to go there. I'll put this one as well. I think we're just going to leave this one alone. That's all right.
Yeah, no.
I am now mentally casting Dubai's first sort of international caper.
It's got all the makings of a Hollywood blockbuster. So for those of our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, one of Europe's most wanted criminals has been arrested in Dubai. His name is Ridwan Taghi, and he is known to be the leader of the gang Angels of Death. He's 41 years old, and he had been on Interpol's international fugitive list, wanted for crimes including murder and drug trafficking.
Probably shouldn't be so flippant.
We shouldn't be flippant at all. Now, this particular person fled from Netherlands to the UAE last year. He used fake documents to do so. Now, while he didn't commit any crimes in the UAE, an arrest warrant was issued for him through Interpol last year. Dutch police had also issued a reward of more than 400,000 dirhams for any information about his whereabouts. Now, working with Dutch authorities and Interpol, Dubai police were able to arrest him at a villa he was staying in here in Dubai, and he will now be facing judicial procedures here in the UAE.
Full drama.
Full drama. And I see the makings of a Netflix documentary or film.
Interesting that the judicial, and I don't know enough about this, and I suspect you don't know either, to know why, but that the, he's going to go through the courts here rather than, what, extradited and go through in Europe.
We are getting more information on that, but at this stage, he's going to face judicial procedures here. I imagine that's part of the formalities which happen before a person is extradited, but we are reaching out to authorities here to get further information.
Very interesting. Yes. Right. For those of us who think we deserve a golden visa, Tom Urquhart and I have both put in about 20 years in the Gulf. Net worth, 40,000 dirhams between the two of us. What do we have to do?
Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you and tell you that I don't think you can even apply through this new procedure.
Well, hang on.
I'll tell you why. Okay. So first of all, UAE residents who want to apply for a golden visa can now do it online through the portal business.goldenvisa.ae.
Right.
All they have to do is fill a detailed form, upload documents on a website, and this they will get a golden residency visa or a golden card, which grants the person and his or her family 5 or 10 years of residency in the UAE. And the reason you both are not eligible is
we don't have 10 million dirhams in the bank.
That too. And also
speak for yourself.
Well, I speak for myself, yeah. So I don't know about you, Brian, sorry.
It's this particular website is at this stage open for businessmen, innovators and professionals in certain fields. Now I've gone through the website and I was, you know, trying to figure
I'm
out if
it.
I can
I'm
apply.
I'm on it right now. Yeah.
So one of the things is who can apply? Professionals with entrepreneurial experience from around the world are eligible. An entrepreneur who is someone who has set up a business of their own at some point in their careers and wishes to do so again in the UAE.
There's an artist visa that they're launching for creatives.
Yes, yes, they are.
I wrote a book.
This particular website.
I'm just saying.
Does not apply to you.
Thanks, Natasha.
Cut her down while she's, you know, kick her while she's down. Don't worry about that.
I've got more details. So to obtain the business visa, you must, A, be able to substantiate your experience as an entrepreneur. Are you able to do that, Brandy?
No.
B, have been a majority shareholder of a startup or a member of its senior leadership.
Righty, righty.
C, be willing to relocate to the UAE. You're already here. That's fine. And legally establish a business in one of the Emirates. And D, have a business idea or business plan that you wish to bring to life in the UAE. So I imagine that might work for you, Brandy.
I have loads of ideas for businesses. I have ideas for businesses on a daily basis.
Good job.
You could argue. It absolutely
spends four
is.
Hours over breakfast every morning coming up with ideas for businesses. Surely that ticks the box, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I imagine it will, yes.
I'm going to have a word with someone. I don't know who.
What is interesting about this story is it's the latest in a sort of long line of visa stories, isn't it? So there's obviously a lot of thinking going on at the very top level about, okay, the system has worked up until now, but with the growth of population, with the aging population at the moment as well, with the benefits of having people spending later on in their life as well, working later in their life, something's got to be done about it. We've seen it with the new student visas coming into the country, helping to boost further education and the academia in these fields. Research visas are now coming in as well for fellows that want to use this part of the world for research in different industries. But other areas need to be looked at to retain the wealth and, of course, the intellectual property here in the region. And I think this is the latest in the step of that.
Okay.
Keep the businesses here. Don't let them go home.
Yeah, well, look at this. And also, it's getting the entrepreneurs in, isn't it? It's making clever young people think, I'd rather be here than States, or you know, you graduate from your university in India. Traditionally, you might have looked towards Silicon Valley. How do we get the cream of the crop? How do we get the top brains here? We provide stability. We, you know, take away some of that uncertainty and the rest of it.
Another thing I found interesting in this particular application is that in order to obtain the business visa, individuals will need to have their nomination approved by an authorized government incubator here in the UAE. It's called Area 2071 in Dubai and Hub 71 in Abu Dhabi. And once, only once that nomination has been approved, will these individuals be invited to apply for the visas through the Federal Authority for Identity and Citizenship. So we will be reaching out to Area 2071 and Hub 71 to find out more.
Okay, there you go. Natasha Thomas, thank you very much for joining us in the Business Breakfast studio.
Thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
We've got not just one mega launch this week, but two. If you have been in the Mall of the Emirates lately, you will have noticed a lot of buzz upstairs, kind of near the Apple Store. Majid Al Futtaim and Dreamscape Immersive have teamed up to bring what they're calling the future of entertainment to the UAE. And we're very happy to be joined in the studio by Walter Parks, a co-founder and chairman of Dreamscape Immersive, with us from LA. Walter, thanks for being here.
Very nice to be here.
So I've seen Dreamscape described as immersive virtual reality. What is that?
Have you ever had a VR headset on? Have you tried it?
I have. I've had one of the little Oculus Rifts.
Yes. So it's interesting, but if you notice, virtually all VR shares something. It's a 360 point of view, but you yourself are not in the frame. You're just looking at things or manipulating things with a controller, and you're alone. This is an extraordinary new platform that allows us to actually render you as an avatar with five other people, and the six of you go on an adventure inside a digital world. So it's very much like you are entering a movie and becoming the star of the movie.
Does that mean when you go to see it, you have to bring five friends with you?
No. Actually, we found that if you go with friends, you have a good time, but people sort of become friends afterwards because it's such a sort of a unique experience. And even using the word when you go to see it, you are freely untethered. We are walking around a room about the size of this one, engaging with props, engaging with each other, talking to each other, and really having a full-on adventure in a virtual world.
So talk me through the ideas of these adventures, because I was thinking them of kind of being like movies, like plots.
Well, you know, it's one of those times where the pitch of the company is actually sort of true. But I have a long background in motion pictures myself as a screenwriter, a producer, and I was the founder of the motion picture division of DreamWorks Pictures and ran it for the first 12 years. My creative partner, a man named Bruce Vaughn, was the chief creative officer of Disney Imagineering and was responsible for the creation and the deployment of theme park rides all over the world. And in a lot of ways, those two things merge in Dreamscape. We like to say that we're trying to offer up the emotional satisfaction you get from a big Hollywood movie with the visceral thrills you get from a great theme park ride, but we're able to deliver this digitally, not at a theme park 30 minutes away, but rather at the mall, in this case, the Mall of the Emirates. When I saw I was not a believer in the tech until I demoed the underlying tech created by a group of very talented medical technicians in Geneva, that I saw something very special in this.
How much content are you going to have with this? I mean, you're launching with three adventures, we'll call them. One's undersea, one's kind of alien life. The third is, am I thinking jungly or am I getting...
Yes, well, it's called The Curse of the Lost Pearl. It's part of a series of experiences we're doing called The Magic Projector that posits the discovery of a projector that allows you to not just watch movies, but to actually enter into them, walk it. You actually walk into the screen. It's pretty cool. These are our first three original titles, and we decided to start with original titles for a number of reasons. And we've been open this is the first international launch. We've been open in Los Angeles, and we've just finished our first year with our first three original titles, and we continue to break our own attendance records. So we never anticipated our titles to be that strong. On the other hand, the plan is to be adding three titles a year. And in fact, this next year, we'll be adding our first studio franchise titles, one based on How to Train Your Dragons, where you actually train your dragon and get to fly independently of each other. It's quite amazing. And the next one is based on Men in Black, which is a series of films that I produce.
We were talking earlier on in the show about the fact that 2019 has been a good year for the movies. A lot of people go into cinemas, a lot of people go into movie theatres as well to watch the movies. How much interest are you getting? I mean, you bring so much experience to this project, but from other studios, from other motion picture studios in the States, are they interested in breaking new ground, breaking new barriers for the future through this?
Yes, yes. I'm happy to say that we, among our partners, our investor partners, our Time Warner Media, 21st Century Fox before it was acquired by Disney. So now Disney, in fact, MGM, IMAX, Steven Spielberg personally. So Hans Zimmer personally. It's a funny time in Hollywood. Mm. The industry is doing quite well, but in a sort of a narrow band, meaning the Marvel Universe and Star Wars, there's a small handful of franchises that's really accounting for, 70-80% of the box office and the activity at studios. What that causes is a great interest and curiosity from talent in particular and studios to find other avenues, because at some point, the gravy train of these franchises is going to run out, you know, so we're hopefully there. I think the other thing that the studios feel is that in a world that is so dominated by streaming, both in retail and in entertainment, you need to continue to create unique experiences to get people out, you know. And one of the reasons why, by the way, I'm very glad that we're in business with Majid Al-Fatim and at the Mall of the Emirates, because that's a whole place that's aimed at giving you, exceptional experiences to get you out. Yeah.
I'm looking at sort of the rules here. No high heels. That's obvious if you're stepping in. Not recommended if you're pregnant. No children under 10. If you're doing stuff like How to Train your Dragon, surely that's...
Well, good question. How to Train Your Dragon is actually no one under 8. And we sometimes look the other way. It actually has to do with the headset itself. It's quite interesting. We use different headsets at different locations, and you mentioned Oculus Rift. They recommend kids not under 10 not to use it. Not because there's anything dangerous. They don't have any data about if some kid was to spend 8 hours in a headset, what would that do to eye development. In our case, these are 10 or 15 minute experiences, so there's no problem whatsoever. So a benchmark of about 10.
We're running out of time, unfortunately. Is it the same every time you go, or because you're stepping into it, could you effectively be in the same adventure two or three times and have a different experience each time?
Well, I'll tell you, I can answer very firsthand on that, because I've been very involved in the making of these, and I took a group through one of our titles, Alien Zoo, yesterday. I've done it 200 times. Because I made it. You have to go in and check it out. And these are made through a group of people. I might write or direct it, but we have extraordinary artists who are rendering an enormous world. And they're rendering things that it takes many visits to actually see all of it. Your point is very well taken. You know, movies, you are looking at a screen and the camera's dictating what your point of view is. Here you're in a 360 environment, and I have found that people absolutely experience it new every time. As a result, we have an enormous amount of repeats.
Walter Parks is the co-founder and chairman of Dreamscape Immersive, opening up Mall of the Emirates on Thursday. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Tom and I will be back on air tomorrow morning, 6 a.m.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.